on Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs took down the Pittsburgh Steelers and found a little bit of a silver lining into this 2-5 season. But silver lining notwithstanding, I can't help but focus on the giant cloud still surrounding it. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but the team is 2-5. I mean, beating Landry Jones is great, but the path to the playoffs is all but stomped on. But do the Chiefs have a shot at a playoff run? Kind of, sort of, maybe. We'll talk about that a little bit. Talk about the Chiefs' victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then we'll look ahead to the Chiefs' battle with the Detroit Lions in London. Then we'll break down three proposed Chiefs trades from Gil Brandt on NFL.com. And I think most Chiefs fans feel unanimously about what he pitched. For the opening block, I'm still confused about how to feel about the 2015 season. I don't even know what to root for. The first thing that caught my eye before the Chiefs took on the Steelers, other than that Jeremy Maclin was inactive for this game with his concussion issues, was what the Chiefs did with the offensive line. Eric Fisher moved back to the left side at left tackle. Ben Grubbs stayed at left guard. Mitch Moore still at center. But then right guard was Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, for the rest of the show known as simply LDT, because his name still is hard for me to say. And Jeff Allen came in at right tackle, and they were a good functional offensive line for the first time. Maybe in, they might have been the best offensive line showing that we've seen in 2 years for the Chiefs, or a year and a half. And that's not saying much, and they weren't perfect, but Jeff Allen was awfully good. Eric Fisher had a couple of issues, but he was pretty good overall. And Ben Grubbs, I'll talk about him a little bit more. He's not going to be playing against the Lions. He's had his struggles this year. Mitch Morse has seemed to really get a little bit of the rookie learning curve hitting him the last few weeks. And LDT had a couple of stumbles as well. So the interior offensive line had its mistakes, but the edges were pretty solid. That made Alex Smith's life a little bit easier. Charkandrick West had a great day behind that offensive line. I'll talk about it in a little bit more detail a little later on. But there's a silver lining there. The offensive line, though I would say below average, had a pretty good showing against the defense. It's not great, but it's not terrible. It's certainly not the Bears' level of terrible. So the offensive line looked good. Charkandrick West played great. Chris Conley had a really nice game. It seems like he's improving and getting some chemistry with Alex Smith. The Chiefs were much better on third down than they had been the previous six miserable showings. And now I guess you could say that with a plausible but fully unlikely 6-3 record from here on out, which I'll explain how that's plausible. But with a 6-3 record from here on out, which it would be shocking just by the numbers, that would still only be enough to keep the Chiefs away from a top 10 draft pick. You know, they could, one of those guys that can change the future of a franchise, or at least really bolster an offense or defense. Maybe you're just to look at two guys the Raiders have ended up with at the top of a couple of drafts: Khalil Mack, Amari Cooper, changing the complexion of their offense and defense respectively, not to mention trying to find a franchise quarterback. But so if the Chiefs went 6-3 from here on out, and again, I'll touch on how that's plausible, that would put them at 8-8. And that, I can understand there are going to be some of you listening now who will disagree with this point, and you'll have a very good reason to, but I would argue that in the NFL, an 8-8 season or a 7-9 season is probably the worst season you can have, with the exception of the years where 7-9 or 8-8 gets you into the playoffs. But just missing the playoffs and kind of feeling dead in the water the whole year, like a 1-5 start will do to you, I'll argue that is the worst composition of an NFL season that you can come up with. Because obviously, in the NFL, if you get in the playoffs, stuff will happen, stuff can happen. And in a lot of ways, making the playoffs can be a success for the entire season as a whole, even if you lose in the first round, which the Chiefs are great at. But with 7-9 or 8-8 or even 6-10, you're getting a middle of the round draft pick. you don't really have anything to hope for, either looking forward to April, or now almost May, I suppose, or looking forward to January and February for the playoffs. It's just everything is gray. So barring a truly, legitimately historic turn of events where a 1-5 team would run on to make the playoffs, the Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs, but they're not in total tank mode. There's no equivalent to suck for luck, and the Chiefs, even if there was, the Chiefs wouldn't be a part of it. The Chiefs are a mediocre team. Maybe a bad to mediocre team, I suppose. A below average team. So there's no suck for luck here. Even though, and that season would be terrible. The 0-16 Lions season, or the year whenever the Colts absolutely imploded after Peyton Manning was injured and had surgery, and before the year before Luck showed up, I'm sure that was miserable. But if you asked any Colts fan, they'd tell you that that totally miserable season was worth absolutely every second to end up with Andrew Luck, you know, 3 months after the season ended. So what do Chiefs fans root for now? This is a question that I actually want to hear your feedback on, especially with next week being a bye week. If I'm going to do a show, if I don't take my own bye week, I need to have a lot of questions and thoughts from you guys, which you can always send me Facebook messages to the Ref and the Kicker Facebook page, facebook.com/RTK show, or tweet me on Twitter at JBBriscoe. It's JBBRISCO. What are you rooting for? What do you think Chiefs fans should be rooting for? What are we even watching for here? We're not watching and rooting for losses because it's not that bad yet. The Chiefs aren't so fully incapable that we can sit here and go, hey, you know what? We can end up with a third overall pick, because the way I'm looking at this Chiefs team as they're currently constructed, this is a 6-7, maybe an 8-win team. No, it's a 6 or 7 win team. So you're not rooting for tanking. You're not rooting for the best player in the draft. You're going to have, you know, the 12th pick and miss the playoffs by a couple of games. And even though there are silver linings showing up, like all those ones I mentioned at the top of the show, I can't take those silver linings too optimistically, because I'm remembering what we said about this team in the preseason. And I'm remembering what I said. I think for the most part, Chiefs fans are pretty optimistic. There was an optimism surrounding the team, you know, with Peyton Manning declining. The Broncos' defense has proven to be absolutely insane. But Manning declines. The Chiefs have a chance to step up. Third year of Andy Reid's offense. Third year of Alex Smith in it. Jeremy Maclin comes in. Obviously, Jamal Charles being injured is something that we can't control. But even now, Jarkandrick West is looking awfully good, which I said in the preseason. I've been so wrong about so many things, and I'm the first person to admit it. But I said very, very early on in the preseason, Jarkandrick West is the second best running back on this team. And the Chiefs seem to agree with me now on that, which is fun. But what are we rooting for now? So now, to defend the idea that the Chiefs have a plausible chance of somehow going 8-8 by going 6-3 the rest of the season, here are the remaining games and the records for these teams the Chiefs have for the rest of the season. Going to London as a home game against the 1-6 Lions, then to Denver, 6-0, then to San Diego, 2-5, Buffalo at home, they're 3-4, Oakland is 3-3, San Diego at home, as I said, 2-5, going to Baltimore, 1-5, Cleveland at home, 2-5, and then Oakland again, 3-3 right now. There's one team with a winning record there. It's the Broncos going to Denver after a bye week, who again is sitting at 6-0, and the Raiders are 3-3. They're a .500 team. The Chiefs have to play two times, and the Raiders look awfully good. I will not say anything bad about the Raiders right now, because they are looking fully functional as a football team. But the Chiefs are facing predominantly losing teams, at best .500 teams, all across the board, with the exception of going to the Broncos on November 15th. You could see a winning streak get starting together there. Just as, and we said, I said this during the preseason and in the offseason and everything, looking at the Chiefs' schedule, Texans, they needed a win, they did. Losing with Broncos, Packers, Bengals, no shock there. But they had to win against the Bears at home. They should have won in Minnesota. And if they did, think of what we'd be saying right now. We'd be looking at a 4-3 team going to beat a bad Lions team, going to 5-3, even if you lose to the Broncos again and then you lose at the Chargers, this team is 500 at 5-5 with a bunch of losing teams or 500 teams to finish off the season. But I'm sorry to make you all relive the misery that comes with remembering the Bears and Vikings games. But what that looks like in reality is the Chiefs probably, of all those games I just mentioned, they probably win five of them. Win five of those games from here on out, go 7-9, middle of the pack draft pick, miss the playoffs by three games, you know, like the Broncos, Bears, and Vikings games. Winning those might have changed the fate. And you look at really bad teams right now, like you look at the Buccaneers and the Jaguars are two teams that come to mind, and then the Lions might be worse, I don't know. But the Buccaneers, you've got Mike Evans, and obviously you're looking at Jameis Winston. And what you're rooting for is for him to progress. If you're the Jaguars, who have been unbelievably terrible for, I think, 3 or 4 years now, you're looking at Blake Bortles. You're seeing if he'll progress. You're seeing how the rest of the team develops. You've got T.J. Yeldon. You're looking for development there. But the Chiefs are beyond that, or they should have been, or we thought they were before the season. And this falls back to John Dorsey and Andy Reid, the coaching, the roster construction. We're not sitting here looking for Justin Houston to add some aspect to his game. And we are saying stuff like that about Chris Conley, and that's fine. He's a rookie. But we should not be saying, well, this is a young offensive line, which isn't even true. Well, this is a young offensive line. They gel a little bit. They come together. Conley steps up. Albert Wilson gets some more reps. You know, Marcus Peters continues to improve. If Justin Houston really finds his groove again, this team could be pretty good in a year or two. We're beyond that. That's not why Andy Reid is here. It's not why we talked about this Chiefs team as a contender in the preseason. This team is supposed to be so far beyond that. And to backslide this harshly after a playoff season and a near playoff season, to the point where we're telling ourselves, oh, hey, the offensive line played pretty well. Eric Fisher looked pretty good at left tackle. Jeff Allen looked pretty good at right tackle. Maybe this team's, I don't know, four pieces away from being a contender. This team's supposed to be beyond that. This is year three of this entire experiment. And please, specifically hear this, please don't hear me just crushing the Chiefs. I'm not even mad. It's just where this team is right now, and it's disappointing. And I'm not saying don't be encouraged by Marcus Peters and Chris Conley's development. Do. Be glad for that. Dee Ford had a pretty good game. Tom Bahali looks like he has some life still. Derek Johnson's played pretty well. Appreciate those things. That's awesome. If Ford and Peters and Conley develop, you have three really good players there. Those guys all have a lot of potential, a whole lot of athleticism. All for it. Great. Steven Nelson makes some good plays throughout the season. Keep an eye on him. Watch Mitch Morse continue to develop. Awesome. See those silver linings. I completely support that. But don't lose sight of what this team was supposed to be, where this franchise is supposed to be right now. This is not a pick out the silver linings team, or it wasn't supposed to be. It hasn't been that way since Andy Reid got here. We're not watching a young quarterback develop and taking the losses for what they're worth. We're watching a veteran quarterback and a veteran head coach put together an offense that for the first 6 weeks was useless. And then they played well against the Steelers, and the defense looked good against Landry Jones. And again, take those. If you want to be optimistic, you have places to be optimistic. But do not talk about this Chiefs team as if we're just here to watch the rookies and the second year players and all of those young guys develop as the Chiefs build a young core, like they have some long term plan. The Chiefs don't have their long-term quarterback. They have Alex Smith, who will be the guy this year and next year, and then maybe they draft a guy in the first round to sit behind Smith for a year. I hope they do. But right now, the Chiefs don't look like they have a plan. They have a defense that's pulling it together that has a lot of talent, some really good things, really in every unit of the defense. The secondary, at least before Phillip Gaines got injured, had some prime talent, some prime depth. The defensive line has exceeded expectations. Alan Bailey and Jay Howard are a couple of guys who do not get talked about enough. And the linebackers, we've got Derek Johnson returning, those couple of young guys. Josh Malgo is not a long-term answer, but he's fine. And then obviously on the edges, Justin Houston, you believe him. Tom Bahali had a nice game. D4 is developing. Defense has some talent. The offense looked incompetent for the five losses in a row the team put together. And that's just inexcusable, and I'm not just trying to beat a dead horse. And I realize now I've been talking about this for 15 minutes. I feel lost as a Chiefs fan, because this isn't supposed to be a team that's building or rebuilding. This is supposed to be a team that's contending right now, and they're not. And I get it. So we can take these positives for what they're worth. We can take Charkandrick West and look at his potential future. Conley and Peters and Morse and the rookies and all the young guys. Go ahead and get excited about them. But overall, this team would probably be better off if they didn't win another game, had a chance to draft the quarterback of the future or an elite anything. Find, you know, the Chiefs' Amari Cooper to pair with Jeremy Maclin, whatever. Probably be better off if they didn't win another game, but that's not fun, and I don't want to see the Chiefs lose, but I don't know what to get excited about anymore. Watching guys improve is one thing, but watching a team win is completely different, and that's what we should be expecting from this Chiefs team, and it's pretty much too late. If the Chiefs win in London and then they go to Denver and win after the bye week, I will change my tune. They won't catch the Broncos, but that will open the door to maybe a chase at a wild card spot if they win in Denver. I'm open to it. I'll hear you out. But until that happens, this season's effectively over, and Chiefs fans are just as aimless as the offense looked for five straight losses. I feel like that ended up being a more depressing kind of opening segment than I meant for it to be. So let's talk about a victory. And let's take the happy things we can take from it. Kansas City Chiefs 23, Pittsburgh Steelers 13. Chiefs record their second victory of the season, a victory at home, their first victory at home in those seven games. The Steelers fall to 4-3, and a team that the week before beat the Arizona Cardinals with Landry Jones. Chiefs made Landry Jones look like a third-string quarterback. He went for 209 yards, a touchdown, and two picks. Alex Smith, on the other hand, went for 250 and a touchdown. No turnovers. Le'Veon Bell ended up getting 121 yards on just 17 carries, a better game than I thought he would come up with. Where Charkandrick West, though, his first career 100-yard game on 22 carries, 110 yards, and a touchdown. Antonio Brown also got his numbers, 6 for 124. Travis Kelce led the Chiefs in receiving, 5 for 73. Let's roll through the game a little bit chronologically here. For the first score of the game, a team without Jamaal Charles, I think, smartly used DeAnthony Thomas to basically single-handedly get them to the red zone, where the offense predictably stalled and hit a field goal. Cairo Santos thought he might have another chance to break the all-time field goal record. He didn't, which was nice. The Chiefs took an early 3-0 lead, again, basically because DeAnthony Thomas got the Chiefs so far before the Chiefs gave up. Chiefs almost ended up stopping the Steelers in three plays, but then Landry Jones had a big pass over the middle to Antonio Brown. Peters was injured on that play, which made me very nervous, but returned later in the drive. That's one thing that would make this season worse, is if guys, and are arguably in a way at this point, worse than like Justin Houston getting injured, I think would be like Marcus Peters getting injured. A young guy with a lot to learn still, getting hurt and missing the second half of his rookie season, that would be really, really depressing. So, obviously, super glad that injury for Peters was minor, because he ended up, as I said, coming back later in the game. The Chiefs' big men then beat the Steelers' big package and stuffed D'Angelo Williams on 3rd and 1. Then the Steelers converted on 4th, but then on 3rd and 2 inside the 10, pass was dropped by D'Angelo Williams. Steelers took a field goal, tied it up at 3-3. Towards the end of the first quarter, Alex Smith stepped up on a really nice pass and hit Conley for 25, the first big flash from Chris Conley, who ended up with a statistically nice game, but he seemed to be in places, in big places, pretty frequently, and Smith was not afraid to look for him. Albert Wilson actually led the receivers in yardage with 71 yards on just 3 receptions and 6 targets. Conley led the team in targets with 7. He got 6 of those for 63 yards and his first career touchdown. which I'll talk about in a second. But that 6 for 63, 10 yards average per pass, a touchdown, and on just those 7 targets, so everyone was completed except for one for Chris Conley. Really a nice step, makes him look like he might be able to be not only a big physical presence with some explosiveness, but most importantly, someone reliable in this offense across from Jeremy Maclin. So Chiefs might have something with Chris Conley. Got a nice flash of it here. End of the first quarter then happened. Smith had a nice scramble, but Charkandrick West got a personal foul. Looked more like a general flag towards a scrum that happened. So the Chiefs might have gotten the raw end of the deal there. Smith then nailed an open Travis Kelce for 17. West picked up the first down and more. Then Smith missed West on a scramble screen garbage thing that was infuriating. And then 3rd and 8 came around, and I always, on 3rd and 8, like to predict a nice 6-yard Alex Smith pass. You know, maybe 2, maybe just a yard short of the first down marker usually seems to happen. But that absolutely did not happen here. On 3rd and 8, it was a dart to Travis Kelce for 16 yards. Kelce was leaned on heavily in this drive. The offensive line looked better even at that point. Smith made some great throws and some bad decisions, like this check down screen scramble thing to Charkandrick West. Plays like that are infuriating from Alex Smith. But being able to step up in the pocket, hit Kelce when he's open, have a dart to Kelce, end up hitting Chris Conley, that's what I expected from this offense. What we saw in this game is what I thought this offense would look like in the preseason, where Smith would have some nice throws, some smart plays, and he would have some throws and decisions that would just make you groan and just yell at your ceiling, what is he doing? Why would you do that? And he's antsy still behind this offensive line, but he looked generally much more poised because he wasn't getting hit constantly, although he is, I believe, the most abused quarterback in the NFL statistically. Then the shocking happened for the Chiefs offense. With a draw on 3rd and 4, the Chiefs got stuffed again, so they took a field goal. And then everybody playing the Chiefs drinking game took a shot. 6-3 Chiefs, and the takeaway in that from that drive and where it ended is that either Andy Reid doesn't trust his offense or his quarterback or his offensive line, or he's just bad at play calling. And I'm leaning towards it being the first one, but if Andy Reid doesn't trust his offense or his quarterback to throw the ball on third down from the 4-yard line, or doesn't trust his quarterback to throw the ball in the red zone, that's still on Andy Reid, and that might sound unfair for a second, but hear me out. Andy Reid and John Dorsey went and got Alex Smith. This is who they wanted. And they built this offense. These are the guys. Now, obviously, no Jeremy Maclin, no Jamaal Charles. This isn't the offense they thought they would have. But, it, I mean, this offense, it was the best it looked since the Houston game without those two guys. So I am kind of leaving that aside. Reid's got to put more faith in Alex Smith to throw the ball in the red zone. Alex Smith has to earn it. The offensive line has to hold up. Receivers have to make the plays. And the fact that all of those things are kind of up in the air for this team right now is infuriating. Also, somehow Travis Kelce is just not getting red zone targets like ever, which is infuriating. Nick Jacobs on Twitter, at Jacob71, always doing a lot of good Chiefs work. He said, on that draw, though, he said, West didn't follow his blockers there. A bunch formation was designed to seal the edge. Grubbs pulls. It's a touchdown if he runs off tackle to the right. That was the right play call, looking at it again. West just went the wrong way. Offensive line and tight ends sealed on the right side. And I went back and looked at the screenshots and that play. And Nick Jacobs is right. That play actually should have been a touchdown if West read his blockers a little bit. He's a young running back, but I say that about Nile Davis all the time. The vision is what separates running backs. You look at Le'Veon Bell, and his patience and his vision are what make him a great running back. Hopefully that's something that develops with Charkandrick West, because I really like his physical tools. Brian McGannon on Twitter tweeted that the Chiefs have run 8 plays inside the 15-yard line. Travis Kelce has been targeted 0 times as of that point, which I was just talking about. I don't understand that at all, truly. Steelers got to 4th and 1 of the Chiefs' 30-yard line. The Chiefs stuffed D'Angelo Williams. Dee Ford was getting credit on the play all over Twitter. I can't remember if he made the actual tackle or not, but a nice game from Dee Ford and the defensive line holding up on 4th and 1, always a great thing. 3rd down under pressure for the Chiefs. Smith hit Conley again for a 1st down, took a pretty big hit, once again, this game showed signs of what I expected this offense to look like in the preseason, in the offseason, as this team was being built. So to see signs of that is nice, if not kind of sad, because it's, you know, kind of over at this point. Then Smith, again, this is what I expected from this team, and it's so frustrating that it's too late. A short little pass to Albert Wilson turned into a wonderful 40-yard play, took the Chiefs into the red zone. Wilson took a couple of hits and spun out of them. It was great. It was a quick, short little pass that the receiver then made a play. That's what this offense was designed for. It just took 7 weeks for it to happen. Then another shocking turn of events, red zone, 3rd and 10. I said out loud, I said, this pass will not go 10 yards. It went about half that. Field goal, 9-3 Chiefs. Then right after that, Derek Johnson had a beautiful interception, and it felt like the game took a little bit of a shift there. Just a big mistake from Landry Jones. Defense shows up big after a disappointing stand from the offense. Then Smith takes a sack as the offensive line collapses, and Santos misses a 54-yard field goal at halftime. Right before halftime, the entire stadium collectively weeps. 9-3 into the half. So the Derek Johnson interception did not, if you didn't catch it, did not end up actually changing the game. But it felt like it could have been a big momentum shift, and the offense just decided that it wasn't going to be. Halftime came and went. Chiefs went 3 and out. Defense forced another punt. Smith went deep to Conley on the sideline. It was just inches beyond Chris Conley's fingertips. And I didn't see a whole lot of conversation about that play, but that, God. If Conley has a half step quicker, or if Smith takes a tiny bit off that pass, we could be talking about a really beautiful play there that would really contradict the idea that Alex Smith can't throw the deep ball or the Chiefs don't have the ability to stretch the field like that. And now you could say that the fact that the play didn't work means that Alex Smith can't throw the deep ball, and I understand, I hear that, but it was an accurate throw, and I can't identify if that was an issue of Conley just not getting that quarter step more, or if Alex Smith overthrew him by a little bit. It just barely missed, and I hope the Chiefs continue trying that play, because that's the explosiveness this team desperately needs to add. So the offense died, they punted from the end zone, and then there was the crazy bobble, Derek Johnson off of Antonio Brown into Eric Berry's awaiting arms, interception in Eric Berry's diving arms, and the Chiefs began at midfield. Wonderful play. Eric Berry has his pick at Arrowhead, less than a year, I believe, after being diagnosed with lymphoma, which is still incredible. So that was a great play. And again, you think, okay, Landry Jones is making mistakes. Second interception. This is where the game starts to shift. And this time it actually kind of did. Chiefs started at midfield, like I said. Then Smith hits Albert Wilson deep. Offense keeps moving. Conley breaks a couple of tackles on a screen for a first down. Hand off to West. Then again, and then again. And it worked on the third try. Great effort by West. Big showing by Wilson and Conley on the drive. The Chiefs recorded what I have been calling now a double field goal, because they scored 6 points on one play, which some teams call a touchdown, but for the Chiefs, they only score in threes, so that must have been really confusing for the offense. So touchdown, rushing touchdown for Charkandrick West, the highlight of his day. The Chiefs really extend their lead. Then on defense, there's a big play against Marcus Peters. I think it could have been called offensive pass interference. I'm not going to gripe about the officiating, but that's my first thought was, oh, that's OPI. And then Sean Smith had an interception in his hands inside the 5-yard line. But ultimately, Landry Jones finds Martavis Bryant for a 19-yard touchdown to bring the game to a 16-10 score, which made me a little bit nervous. And then it got worse after the Chiefs punted and the Steelers went back down and got a field goal to bring it to 16-13. Thankfully, that's the closest the score ever got on that Chiefs punt. Spencer Ware was getting work on that drive over Nile Davis. Smith got destroyed by 2 Steelers on a drop back. And then on 3rd and 14, shockingly, the screen didn't work. Le'Veon Bell had a 42-yard run to get the Steelers moving towards field goal range. But Tom Bahali, leading the charge with some help from Alan Bailey, moved the Steelers back on a sack, held them to a field goal there. And then the Chiefs offense, Smith hit Travis Kelce for 26 yards. That's at least the third play of the game where Travis Kelce had over 15 yards on one reception. Then the next play, Charkandrick West had a 32-yard run, great vision, great burst. Seeing a lot of those factors I was talking about earlier, that being able to have that patience and vision is going to be hugely important, because we know he has the physical tools. And then a 3rd and 1, the Chiefs converted it on a like a true college option where Smith just booted out and was trailed by one of the running backs where he could have pitched it, could have kept it. Chiefs convert. Then Smith hits Conley for the touchdown, first touchdown of Chris Conley's career. And then on the defensive side, Tomba strip sack, Jay Howard recovery. It was a true tomahawk chop strip sack fumble. It was a fantastic play, and the only thing I could think of after the dust settled is how badly I wish that this team wasn't 1-5 at the time, and now two and five, obviously. Because there's stuff that's good, and there's stuff from this game that was encouraging. West and Conley and Kelsey, the offensive line, Alex Smith, Tomba bouncing back. Ryan Tracy tweeted, D Ford has played more today and has made Holly more effective. Chiefs need to balance the snaps going forward. D Ford looked good. Alan Bailey, Jay Howard. Even Marcus Peters, who had a couple of plays where he got beat, he's going to be a very good football player. And I can't get excited about it because this team started so poorly. And the season is so close to being, like, almost mathematically over. And you can't look at... You're not looking at Tomba Holly like, oh, he's got gas in the tank. You know, the team pulls together next year. No! We don't know what Tomba Holly and Derek Johnson are going to look like next season. They could both be done by the end of this year. The wear and tear of an NFL season changes people. I mean, a victory is a victory. Yeah, it was against Landry Jones. If Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback for that game and healthy, do I think the Chiefs win? Probably not. Those two interceptions probably don't happen. Their offense is overall scarier. So no, probably not. The Chiefs probably needed it to be Landry Jones to win because the Steelers are a good team. A good team with their third-string quarterback, but a good team. Victory is nice. Wins are more fun than losses, even though long-term it's probably worse for the Chiefs to be winning games. And there are those things to be excited about, those things to enjoy, to find happiness in. But again, it's just so hard when you look at the record of this team and go, oh yeah, this really doesn't matter. Speaking of things that might just not matter, Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Detroit Lions in London, game kicking off at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Just for kicks, I'll be up bright and early running the board for the Chiefs pregame show on 810 Sports Radio WHB here in Kansas City. I believe that starts at 7 a.m. I cannot wait for that to begin. I will be hitting the buttons. But you can listen to this anytime, and I'm sure you'd rather listen to this anytime because it's the dulcet tones of my natural radio voice. And you can take it with you, you know, whenever because it's a podcast. These are a couple of really struggling teams. In fact, I think whoever loses this game should just stay in London for, like, I don't know, just until the season's over. Just forfeit the rest of the year, try to get a draft pick, and just don't come back. Because if the Lions lose, they'll fall to 1-7. And if the Chiefs lose, they'll fall to 2-6, with some of those losses being to the Lions and Bears and Vikings. So whoever loses this game, don't come back. We don't want you anymore. The Lions have had some remarkable struggles. I mean, for part of a game, Matthew Stafford was benched for Dan Orlovsky, the guy who scrambled out of the back of the end zone for a safety that one time. That was fun. They have no running game to speak of. Amir Abdullah is their leading rusher on the season. He has just over 200 yards and one touchdown. Even Calvin Johnson hasn't done anything spectacular. 43 receptions, almost 600 yards, and 3 touchdowns on the year. He's right around Jeremy Maclin has 4 fewer receptions and 40 fewer yards. And Jeremy Maclin's played a game less. As of the recording of this show, which is at 2 a.m., technically Friday morning now, the Chiefs are 4-point favorites on this neutral site. This is just, it's going to be ugly, and I think the Chiefs win. I'm picking the Chiefs again for the first time, I believe, since the Broncos game. I think the Chiefs win in London because the Lions have so much going wrong right now. They just, their defense isn't good. They're 1-6. I mean, what do you want me to say? But their defense isn't good, and their offense is bad. And this is a team with the number one overall pick and a franchise quarterback, quote-unquote, and Calvin Johnson. And I'm not scared of anything from this team. I'm really not. Nothing scares me but the Detroit Lions. Plus, this week they had a lot of turnover. They fired offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi, offensive line coach, assistant offensive line coach, and their new offensive coordinator is the quarterback's coach, who has had his own struggles, Jim Bob Cooter, who has the best name in all of sports. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Ben Grubbs will not be playing for the Chiefs, nor will Mike DeVito with a concussion, linebacker Ramique Wilson with a knee and ankle injury. And the question for what the offensive line looks like now is who plays left guard. My first instinct is with Jeff Allen being at right tackle, LDT should probably stay at right guard. I guess Zach Fulton has to flip over to the left guard position, and he hasn't been great at his natural right guard, so that's scary. That's going to be a difficult proposition. However, from Brandon Kiley at BK Sports Talk on Twitter, Ben Grubbs is on pace to allow 45 quarterback pressures this season. Jarre Evans was the only guard to allow more than 41 pressures in 2014. So Ben Grubbs has been really, really struggling, and you cannot allow that kind of pressure in the interior of your offensive line because your quarterback has no space to step up into. And I've been beating the drum about the offensive line being miserable, you know, for a solid year and a half now, maybe longer, I don't even know. And you simply cannot allow pressure up the middle of your offensive line. It will end your offense. Your quarterback will just cripple up and die because he has no space to step up into. Then you have to roll out, but the tackles are trying to kick their guys back, so he'll run into the back of a tackle, and then somebody on Twitter will blame Eric Fisher for the play. Other options for the Chiefs for the left guard would be moving LDT over to the left side and putting Zach Fulton back at his quote-unquote natural right. Or the thing that they could do that I would be like legitimately upset with, I think, is moving Jeff Allen to left guard and putting Donald Stevenson at right tackle. Stevenson didn't play left tackle well. He didn't get a chance to play right tackle over Jeff Allen last week, and Jeff Allen played a good right tackle. Those tackle positions are more important and have less margin for error. Leave Eric Fisher at left tackle. Leave Jeff Allen at right tackle. And just put Fulton in at left guard and pray that it goes okay. Overall for this game, though, and I see now that the over-under is 45. I think I take the under on that by a little bit. I think this game probably plays out something like 23-17. The Chiefs win similar fashion to the Steelers game where it's close for a while, and then towards the end they pull away and, you know, whatever 6 points is actually in pulling away. But nothing from the Lions really scares me. Chiefs have a lot of advantages across the board. I'm not supremely confident by any stretch of the imagination. Could they absolutely lose this game? No question. No question in my mind could the Chiefs gag this game up. They lost to the Bears at home. This team is capable of losing anything. But I don't think they will. I'll take the Chiefs. Like I said, you know, it's 23-17. It seems like Jeremy Maclin's going to play. Having him return to the offense would be a nice touch if the offensive line can just hold up again. So I think that the Chiefs will limp into their bye week 3-5. And then they come out, you know, in theory, with a chance to upset the Broncos in Denver. We'll talk about that when we get there, I suppose. I think the Chiefs win in London. I could not be a whole lot less confident, though. Before we jump into our last segment here about Gil Brandt's trade ideas for the Chiefs, I want to take a minute to talk about a couple of different things. For one, it's just a thank you for your listening, because since restarting weekly shows and me flying solo here with one microphone by myself talking for 30 to 45 minutes every week, since starting that format back in March, this show has had over 50,000 plays just through Arrowhead Addicts podcast feed, which is, don't worry about the technical side of it, over 50,000 plays just through that, plus a few thousand more from the iTunes feed. Just thank you to those of you who have been listening all along, and to people who are just now jumping on, who want to hear about what's going on, where the Chiefs go from here. No matter when you joined, if it's been for more than a season of this show, or if this is the first episode you've ever heard, I appreciate your listens very, very much. And as always, you can get in contact with the show, or me, through the Facebook page, facebook.com/RTK, or RTK show, or on Twitter at JB Briscoe is me. And if you really love this show and really want to support this show financially, you can do that at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. You pledge a little bit of money every month. It can be $5, $10, $20, or $100 if you want to actually sponsor the show. And I even had someone just ask for PayPal information to send a one-time few bucks towards the show, and I appreciate that a ton. But if you want to pledge to help the show out on a monthly basis, you can do that at Patreon. It's at patreon.com/RTK. The four people who are currently doing that are Ty Declare at TyDeclare44 on Twitter, Ben Rahman, Jason Essler, and Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter. That helps the show in the most tangible way. But if you're not in a place to do that financially right now, or you're not sure this show is worth actual money, I will not question you for one moment. But if you do still really like the show, a couple things you can do that are very, very helpful is to share this show, not only, you know, just out on your Twitter feed or anything, which is fantastic, and I appreciate that a ton. But if you're talking to a fellow Chiefs fan, you've got a topic that comes up, and you go, oh, I remember hearing about that on the podcast. Word of mouth for a show like this among Chiefs fans might be the most valuable thing, because there are obviously so many of us who want to talk Chiefs, who want to listen to stuff about the Chiefs, not only in Kansas City, not only throughout the country, but even worldwide. Obviously, if you're one of the listeners out in Mexico or Brazil, you might have a hard time finding a fellow Chiefs fan at the water cooler. But if you're talking Chiefs and a subject comes up, I would love to have you be able to refer back to this show as a reference and hopefully build a new connection back to this podcast. Lastly, if you subscribe to this show on iTunes, you will get it immediately whenever it comes out, which is usually very, very late at night or, you know, very early in the morning on Wednesdays or Thursdays. Sometimes it takes a little longer for it to get up on Arrowhead Addict. So if you want to get the show as quickly as possible, subscribe on iTunes, and that helps me out too. That way you never miss an episode. You download it immediately. I can track those stats. And it's just a consistent way to make sure you never miss an episode. You can do that through iTunes. If you have an Android phone, there are different apps like Podcast Addict and several different other alternatives where you can subscribe with your Android. Wherever you get your podcasts, if you look it up and subscribe to the Roughing the Kicker feed, my voice will constantly be pumping into your ears, which is arguably the greatest gift you can give to yourself. All right, last topic of the day here. On NFL.com, Gil Brandt, who does some really fantastic work, so I'm going to say some things about this article where I will disagree with Gil Brandt, but he does some fantastic things. He put together several trades that he thinks would make a lot of sense in the NFL right now. There's a lot of NFL action. He has Vernon Davis going to the Broncos, making a lot of sense for a sixth-round pick. Matt Forte going to the Broncos for a fourth-ish round pick. The Broncos don't have a fourth-round pick, but he said a fourth-round pick would be about right. And then he goes to three different Chiefs. And he also has Calvin Johnson going to the Panthers, which I think would be very, very interesting. But he thinks a fifth-round pick or so would be worth it for Calvin Johnson. So I think this shows is the value that NFL teams put on draft picks, but keeping those things I just said in mind, the value that NFL teams put on draft picks over proven players, which for me is really kind of absurd. Like with Alshon Jeffrey being worth a fifth or sixth-round pick going to the Giants, he has some issues with his contract and being able to sign him and everything, so I understand the issues that Brandt points out there. But Alshon Jeffrey being a fifth-round pick, that would never happen if he was going back into the draft. So there are a ton of little bits of minutia that you can take issue with just how the NFL works. But he suggests that Tom Bahali could go to the Falcons, and he said he's probably worth a fifth-rounder, but I'd be happy with a sixth if I were the Chiefs. Derek Johnson going to the Packers. Said the Chiefs could ship Johnson to Green Bay for a sixth-round pick and then just give the reins to rookie Ramiq Wilson, who he says is waiting in the wings. And then the most absurd to me, actually, is Sean Smith going to the Patriots. Here it's this season, Smith could be Belichick's Tlaib. The seventh-year pro fits the Patriots' mold as a tall corner with long arms. He could really help their secondary. Yeah, you're right, he could because he's really good, I add parenthetically. I could see him moving for a sixth-rounder. And again, this is Sean Smith's contract year. I get it. Derek Johnson and Tom Bahali, contracts coming up. all getting up there in years. I understand that. But the premium that the NFL teams put on draft picks is crazy. I'm surprised. I mean, even looking at Ben Grubbs, getting Ben Grubbs for a fifth-round pick before the season, even though Grubbs has underperformed in a lot of ways, you're not going to get a starting caliber guard in the fifth round in the draft. It's almost never going to happen. Sean Smith is such a talent. Giving up a sixth round pick is nothing. A sixth round pick this year was Raheem Nunez-Roches, who may never see the field. Six round picks you can scoop up off the ground. You're talking maybe 50 guys between a sixth round pick and undrafted free agents. Now, the argument for shipping these guys, I completely get. If you think you could get maybe even if you could get a fourth-round pick for Derek Johnson, Tom Bahali, and if you don't think you want to or can re-sign Sean Smith, then him as well, then I get it, and it makes sense for the Chiefs. Because this year, Brand is taking the perspective that this season is over, and I'm not going to argue that, and that these guys are players who can't come back, won't come back, shouldn't come back. Tom Bahali, this is his last year here. Everyone's pretty confident in that. He'll finish off this year, and then it's going to be up to Dee Ford to show up across from Justin Houston. Derek Johnson has looked very good, but his career is certainly on the downslope. Sean Smith, I would be happy to give him a contract at this point, looking at the Chiefs secondary and how it currently stands. But if John Dorsey doesn't feel that way, he should trade Sean Smith for a draft pick, because having him for the last handful of games this year isn't going to matter when this team isn't going to make the playoffs if you're not going to try to re-sign him. So I understand the line of logic there. So if you're listening and you're furious about the idea of trading Tom Bahali or Derek Johnson, I get it. That would make me sick to my stomach to watch, you know, truly top of the line Chiefs players of this era be shipped off for mid-round draft picks, but it's where this team is right now. But for sixth-round picks, that the value's just not there for the Chiefs. So I think we could see a move like that happen. I don't think we will. Chiefs, the NFL teams don't make trades like that often. I couldn't tell you who the last, you know, kind of big-name guy the Chiefs traded away or even traded for mid-season is. I don't think I could tell you who the last big-name trade during a season was in the NFL at all. I mean, Jared Allen just got traded, but he is clearly past his prime. Big-name trades don't happen that often in the NFL. It's not baseball's trade deadline. It's not the NBA's trade deadline. But if the Chiefs sit back and go, all right, Ramique Wilson's the future here, Derek Johnson has some stuff left in the tank, but we don't as a team, let's get a fourth-round pick for him, I could see them pulling the trigger on that. In fact, they probably should. However, I don't think those opportunities will present themselves. I think all three of these guys will end up being on the team throughout the course of this season. I think we'll probably see the Chiefs try to bring back Derek Johnson for another year or two and hopefully try to bring back Sean Smith, although I think this is the last season of Tom Bahali in Kansas City, which makes me sad. That's going to do it for this episode of Revving the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, however you want to get it, as long as you're listening and telling people about it. This is a surprisingly long episode for me, because right now we're about to come up on about 3 a.m. I was worried I wasn't going to have enough stuff to talk about for some reason. There's always plenty to talk about with the Kansas City Chiefs. Although next week with the bye, we'll come back and talk about the Lions game, however that goes, from the crack of dawn over in London. But I'm going to need to hear from you, thoughts on this team, questions you might have, comments for the show. You can go to me on Twitter at JB Briscoe, or if you have something longer to say, send a Facebook message to the Facebook page at facebook.com/RTK show. I'm Joshua Briscoe. As always, thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week to do all this all over again, unless Arrowhead Addict trades me away for a sixth-round draft pick, which apparently is all the rage right now.
Excuse me, sir.
Bye, Mom!
Could you drop the bass?